Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, July 20th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my 47 years of doing therapy. And these tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The entire book is available for download, but that chapter contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for the past 17-plus years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us have been gifted. So that's available absolutely free. Also, you can click on the link to download the PDF, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have called in and been stepped through that worksheet process and or they've given testimonials about how the use of that tool has improved their lives and relationships. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. Click on that. It'll let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of the worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And if you do that soon, we hope people do it soon and often because it'll make their lives better. And because it usually stimulates questions, comments, or testimonials. If you do that and you want to talk to us, our call number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and so today, being the 201st day of the year, the lesson is an introduction to a review. And what it says in the introduction, although, again, there are quite a few paragraphs to the introduction, but the essence of the review is that we're going to undertake one practice idea each day and then just sit with it and work with it. And the idea is that every person is your brother or sister, that you are connected to everything. And so when you look at today's lesson, 201, it says, I am not a body, I am free, for I am still as the Creator created me. Lesson 181 is the review. I trust my brothers who are one with me. Everyone is my brother. I am blessed with oneness with the universe and the Creator and of the whole that is myself, forever one with me. I am not a body. I am free, for I am still as the Creator created me. So that's the lesson from the workbook, Lesson 1, 201. And we're also reading the Pam Grout Course in Miracle Experiment book. And she writes, she talks about the review, and she says, Tom Stoppard writes, my body is nothing without me. First, Pam writes, the thing I was going to say, bad news, but that's just my ego talking. The ego feels terribly threatened when I commit to re-examine the lessons for this review every morning and night for 15 minutes. It tries to dissuade me from briefly, it takes a second, thinking about the lessons every hour on the hour, and it gets angry when I no longer let idle thoughts go unchallenged. That's the ego. If a tempting thought creeps in, I combat it like this. This thought I do not want. I choose blank instead. The good news is that by doing this, despite the ego's incessant bad-mouthing, it takes a teensy 4% of my day. I transcend my ego. I relinquish everything that clutters up my mind. So take this, ego. Every lesson for the next 20 days presents proof that I am more than the meat suit. Each offers evidence that the physical rules that I've mastered about caring for my body are just not true. Each one starts with good news. I am not the body. I am free, for I remain as the dude created me. And she suggests a music selection from the jukebox, Three Little Birds by Bob Marley. Lesson 201 is titled, Note to the Body. You are not the boss of me. Walt Whitman said, I am large. I contain multitudes. Pam writes, I am not a body. I am free, for I am as the dude created me. I remain as the dude created me. I have nothing against my body. It's quite useful for playing pickleball, for kissing babies, and for passing out hugs to fellow humanoids. But to see my body as the boundary of my being is a myopic belief. My body is but one piece of the chessboard of who I really am. My true self is much wider. It's a realm made up of joys, ideas, fears, interests, and loves. My body is a temporary clown suit happening within the larger phenomenon of me. To give my body so much attention, as I'm encouraged to do in this culture, is to miss the whole point. Does it really matter which purse it's carrying? Which type of mascara is trimming its eyes? The body was made up by the ego in order to strive. It's a wall erected to make me believe that I'm separate from others. The linear body can only be in one place at a time. Its eyes can only see so far. Putting it on a pedestal like we do, and we all do, is a mysterious case of mistaken identity. I can pretend all I want to be my body, to dress it up like Barbie, to post its pictures on Facebook. But making my body the thing is a silly game that changes nothing at all. Who I really am is a sacred being with no beginning and no end. So that's Pam Grout's commentary about the review and today's lesson. And we have 48, 49 minutes left of our first hour. The second hour today will be the second part of the Getting the Stress You Need workshop. The first part was played yesterday. So we have plenty of time for your comments, questions, answers, soliloquies. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. I was just having a session with somebody, and the topic of speech came up, regulatory speech, the topic of the idea that every time I give anybody any advice, it might be really good advice for them, and it's perfect advice for me. And people are amazed to hear me say, even as a psychologist, when I'm in a session with somebody, that that still holds. Because most of the time in my sessions, what I'm doing is playing back to people what they're saying to me, asking them if they understand it from this perspective or that perspective. And then the rest of the time, I'm either presenting them with tools or asking them how the use of the tools is helping or not so much helping. So if I hear myself in a session say to somebody, you really need to fill in the blank, there's another part of my mind, if I'm having a good day, that says, okay, Tim, listen up, because this is what you most need to do in your life right now. And it's coming out of my mouth dressed up like advice for someone else. Now, hopefully, it's really good advice for them, because hopefully in my job as a psychologist, I'm paying attention to what's going on in their life, and I'm asking to be shown how to be of assistance to them. So it isn't a complete waste of time for them to hear an advice, a piece of advice I give them. It is, however, essentially right on target for my own life. And I'm wasting an opportunity to improve my life if I don't catch that it came out of my mouth in the format of advice. And this led to the idea of being able to recognize that whenever anybody tells me anything, it's mostly about them that they're speaking. Because whatever comes out of my mouth is always going to tell you more about what's going on inside of me than it's ever going to tell you about the people and the world around me. So there was a person in my office, and he was talking about calling a friend that he knew from way back when, and the friend spent the first 5 minutes telling him about all of the problems in his life and what he should do differently. And he realized from our work in sessions that this person was basically giving themselves expert advice without realizing it. The next topic that came up was, he said, so, you know, when I work with people, I change if I think of the phrase, you should do this or that, I change the word to you could do this or that. That way I'm not giving them advice. And so I launched into an explanation of how regulatory speech works. Regulatory speech is the concept that there's a part of my mind that actually listens to what I say. And the more I say something over and over again, the more I tend to believe it's true. I tend to believe it even if there's contradictory evidence, because I think it comes from a really good source, namely me. So the more I practice thoughts like, you made me angry, you hurt my feelings, you're offending me, you're scaring me, the more I'm programming my mind to believe that that's the truth. So one way to use regulatory speech is to have it regulate my beliefs and my thought process, to actually create and strengthen beliefs and thought processes. Another way to use regulatory speech is to recognize that when I think something, even if I don't say it out loud, when I think about saying something, it is revealing to me the truth of what's going on in my unconscious. So let's say I've been teaching this work for 17 years now and using it for myself, and I find myself thinking as I interact with somebody, you're really making me angry. Well, I wouldn't say that out loud most times these days. I would catch it and say it differently. However, if I even think it, that could be used by me as a revelation of the fact that some part of my mind is still holding the belief that people and things outside of me cause my emotions. And now that I'm tapped into that, I have the option of picking up a tool like the Reality Management Worksheet and or the EFT Tapping and or the Mind Goal Management Sheet and or Three Early Memories of Conflict and or the targeted journaling that Michael calls the Mind Shifter tool, and explore, uncover, and begin to dismantle the part of my mind that still believes that people and things outside of me cause my emotions. Well, we've observed over and over again, and we're calling everyone in this work to observe on a regular basis, that my emotions are not caused by people and things outside of me. My emotions are caused in this dynamic process inside my own mind when life events happen or people behave in a certain way, and I choose an interpretation for that behavior or that event. And that interpretation is made up of thoughts and words. If I pour enough of my mind energy into those thoughts, I generate the emotions that go along with those thoughts. So the emotions that I experience are only, always, and forever a result of the interpretations that I choose to place on life events. So when I have a thought that says, you made me angry, or you hurt my feelings, or you're scaring me, I could, to great advantage in my life, use that as a wake-up call that no matter how much I've studied this work, no matter how much I've observed that that isn't true, there's still a part of my mind that wants to go on living as though people and things outside of me are causing my emotions. Then I can pick up the tools and start exploring what that part of my mind is and using the other tools to dismantle the false beliefs that are at the root of that. And sometimes the traumatic energies that have been downloaded that are at the root of that. So there are two primary functions for this process in my mind. One of them is to reveal to me what's going on in my thought that's outside my conscious awareness. And the other one is to program my mind more accurately. Or, you know, I could let it keep running automatically and it will be programming my mind according to the false beliefs that my family and my culture and my previous life experiences have led me to download. So, regulatory speech, it will help me program my mind, and it will reveal to me what has been programmed into my mind. Powerful tools either way, and the choice to use them is ours. Once we become aware of how this process works, then we have the choice to either actively engage these tools or let our lives be driven by, let our experience of life be driven by an automatic process that we're not aware of. So, calling number is 563-999-3581, and we have 40 minutes left. What's on your mind? What's a topic you would like me to explore with you, or a question you might have that we could discuss? Or a worksheet that you want to do, or a testimonial about the last few worksheets you did that were powerfully beneficial. Tonight is a Tuesday night, so I should mention we have a support group coming up tonight, 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And the information to join us through on Zoom is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. And there's a separate page for the login information for Tuesday and Thursday. Tonight's Tuesday, so please use that information. And if you're not somebody who thinks they could benefit from the group experience, but you know somebody who would, please forward that information to them. 563-999-3581. Also, the idea is if you're listening in the archives and you have a question or a comment you'd like to make, you're welcome to email us. Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, or you can email me at tjh at mindshiftersacademy.org. And we will do our best to field those questions, answer them on the internet show, and if you're not able to be here during the live show, you'll be able to listen to the discussion of your question in the archives. The archives are a powerful tool. I've used them to great effect in spurts and fits and spurts throughout the years. I still occasionally go back and listen to shows that were powerful and or review them that left me with big questions. And those archives are available at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And just click on the picture of the microphone, and it will take you to a page where you can scroll through the last 10 years of Mindshifters radio shows. I had the pleasure of interviewing Lauren Spiro the other day, and Lauren is so well connected that she's offered me introductions to several other people to interview. And here's the invitation to be like Lauren. Suggest a book title or someone whose podcast you really enjoy or a blogger that you really get benefit from on these kinds of topics, mental health issues, self-help, personal growth, spirituality, et cetera. And then I will follow up on your suggestion. And if we're lucky, we'll get somebody to agree to be a podcast host either or a podcast guest either for the Mindshifters podcast that we're doing now or the On Your Mind podcast with Journey's Dream, available at journeysdream.org/podcast. And there are a handful of people, growing number of people, who are contacting me saying they were benefiting from the content of that podcast and the ideas about looking for non-medical, ways to supplement psychotropic medications to actually do a healing process for a mental health crisis or spiritual emergency, as some people call it. And there are a host of shows, there are over 60 now that have been published. And the list is growing. So if you've got somebody that you think we would benefit from interviewing, let me know. TJH at Mindshifters Academy, mindshifters-academy.org. And or you can call us at 563-999-3581 and press 1. How can we support you? What is on your mind today? We have no one in the chat room, and we have 6 callers, and we have plenty of time, 35 minutes left. What would you like us to explore? What topic would you like me to discuss? What's come up in the past 10-plus years that has left a question in your mind? I finished over the weekend, I was mentioning that I finished the book about the Zyprexa papers and the story of how Eli Lilly knew of weight gain and diabetes and all kinds of other problems that were caused by his medication Zyprexa, and hid that from everybody. They hid it from the public. They hid it from the FDA. They hid it from doctors. And now we're exploring the book, What the Drug Companies Do, and what you should know about what the drug companies do and what to do about it. And that is going to, the title of that book is The Truth About the Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It by Marcia Engel. And hopefully it will lead us to a series of other interviews about how to help people in a mental health or emotional crises without loading them up with drugs. Well, that's exactly what we talk about here on Mind Shifters Radio, day in and day out, 5 days a week. And the idea is, if I am in pain, if I have a sadness or a fear, a grief, an anger, a frustration, that's an experience, an energy flow experience that's most useful for me as an alarm system to wake me up to the fact that there is something wrong with my thought process. Not the world around me, not the people that I want to change, but there's something wrong with my thought process, and that's why I'm in pain. One of the things that came up yesterday was I was asked to read the blog post that I wrote about the Zyprexa papers and some other interviews that I've been engaging in. And someone said, you know, that's really scary. And I was quick to point out, it is not scary. A blog post that I write, a book that someone writes about the real world and what's happening in it, is not scary. I can generate fear using just about anything that I want to interpret as fearful or interpret negatively. But the outside events don't cause me to feel fear, especially when they're not directly related to immediate physical harm to me or my family members. That kind of fear that comes with the adrenaline rush that, you know, stimulates the fight or flight response doesn't have a lot of emotion, if any emotion, attached to it. It's just a self-protective mechanism of the physical body. But as the Course in Miracles lessons are trying to help us wake up to more and more, we are not just the physical body. We have the potential to access all kinds of other energies. And so most of us who have done a certain level of work have stepped into the realization that even when there's a very important, very dramatic, potentially dangerous situation in front of us physically, we are going to function better in that situation, and everyone is going to benefit and stay safer if we remain clear-headed, if we remain calm rather than emotional. And the truth of this is, for the decades that I worked in various places where it was around the clock, it was a secure facility, it was the adult males like myself who were trained in how to restrain people without anybody getting hurt, every one of those situations relied on us being able to be the safest we could and keep others as safe as possible because we kept calm and we did not let our emotions drive our behavior. So in this work, I acknowledge that outside events happen and they're neutral. When I place an interpretation on it, I give it the only value it's going to have for me. So when I place an interpretation on a set of life events that say this is bad, this is wrong, this is stupid, this shouldn't be happening, that's when I generate a certain impact on my life. I'm generating that impact from the interpretation that I've chosen. And the truth of this is there to be observed. We encourage people to observe it day in and day out. The more you observe this to be true, the more the tools that are offered at whyagain.org will be useful to you. If you are living with the belief that you're not the one causing your emotions, that it's the people and things outside of you that are making you feel sad, angry, hurt, scared, frustrated, etc., then nothing that we talk about or offer at whyagain.org will have any chance to affect your life in a positive way. Because if you choose the interpretation that says the outside world is causing your emotions, that's what your experience is going to be. It's going to be derived from that belief. Your mind is then, it's relegated to only showing you the things that will prove the truth of your negative belief. In this case, the belief that people and things outside of you are causing your upset. This is one of the things about the work with Diedrich Wolsack, where he says, once a negative, you know, foundational belief, a core belief in me is activated, it chooses my emotions. There is no choice for me. The choice for me after I have that emotion is what to do about it. And will I choose to act being driven by the negative emotion, which was chosen by the negative belief that I'm holding? And of course, with Diedrich's work, as with so many other good, deep spiritual traditions, we understand, as Michael Rice says in his worksheet, if I'm in pain, my thoughts are in error. If I have a negative emotion running in my system, what I can instantly know is that the picture of my mind is showing me is coming from corrupt data. There is not, this is not an accurate picture of my life or my circumstance if I'm in anger, fear, sadness, hurt. And I'm learning this for myself at deeper and deeper levels. I have been doing this work, as I mentioned in the intro, for over 17 years. And I still have times where my conscious logical mind and all of its, I know what I know, I'm a psychologist, I have all these years of experience, that trap pulls me in and I get roped into a negative emotional experience, sometimes for weeks, sometimes for months, sometimes for years. And I, as long as I hold on to the belief that because I'm relatively calm when I go to assess the situation, I'm right and the other person's wrong, I continue at different times to generate a negative emotional state and, whether I realize it or not, blame it on people and things outside of me. So this trap, this what David Bohm calls sustained incoherence, this recognition of the flaw in our conscious logical thought that was clearly set out by Krishnamurti and David Bohm, a spiritual teacher and a physicist, is always there. It's always a possibility that I fall into this trap. And the only way out is to come back to basics, to come back to simple statements, simple observations. If I'm in pain, I'm in error. If I'm in pain, my thoughts are in error. My emotions are created by the interpretation I choose and then place on events. And when I pour enough of my mind energy into thoughts that will generate a negative emotion, I begin to experience the physical sensations that go with that emotion. And that's the only thing that creates my emotion. I had somebody in my office the other day, and they were fairly new to this, and they said, well, what are you talking about? How could that, what do you mean? I mean, some things are just really bad, and they are really upsetting, and they are really, and I said, well, look at it this way. Start very simply. Let's say that you're an aunt or an uncle, and you're a fairly healthy, well-balanced person, and you've got this niece or nephew who's 3 years old who comes to you and asks you for a second or third or whatever, a piece of candy that you know they shouldn't have at this point, and you say no, and the child gets angry and slaps your knee and says, I hate you, and stomps off. Now, if you're a fairly healthy, well-balanced person, your interpretation of that is, here's a child who's expressing his or herself, and they're strong-willed, and they're frustrated, the poor kid, let me redirect them, let me make this into a teaching moment, let me reassure them that they're loved and loving and lovable forever, and at the same time hold a limit and not give them candy that I know is not good for them. If, on the other hand, you didn't have such a good upbringing and you're not such a healthy, well-balanced person, and you feel like this kid's only 3 years old and how dare a three-year-old disrespect me and I need to teach this kid a lesson and where are these kids' parents? I'm going to read them the Riot Act. You throw an interpretation like that on this situation, you pour enough mind energy into those thoughts, you're going to generate a whole boatload of negative emotional responses. And it is not happening because of any outside event. Now, when we first learn this, some of us get indignant and resistant, but if we'll slow down and look at the deeper implications here, this is one of the best pieces of news we could ever be handed, because it means you are the architect and the general contractor and the laborer who's building your emotional states. And so when you find yourself with an emotional state that you don't like or you would rather not have, now if you're armed with the tools of whatever body of work you like and works for you, whether it's Ho'oponopono or Sedona Release Method or Byron Katie's work or Michael Rice's Reality Management Worksheet and its complementary tools, you can set out to change your experience of life in each new present moment. And the truth of that is, all it takes is choosing a different interpretation for the life events that have just unfolded or that you believe have unfolded. And if you just keep coming back to basics when these things happen, the ways in which, the extent to which you can craft an entirely different, more loving, more connected, more creative, more rewarding life go beyond words each new heartbeat. And that's what we're here to help people do. Come back, learn the basics, and then keep coming back to the basics day in and day out to do your mental, emotional hygiene every day. To be on top of a situation whenever a negative emotion rises, and to understand, oh, I'm creating my experience of life in this moment by what I'm choosing to focus my conscious awareness upon. I'm creating my experience of life in this moment by the interpretation I'm placing on these life events. All the great spiritual traditions in one way or another tell us all events are neutral. It's literally one of the titles of the lessons from the Way of Mastery. It's the kind of thing that goes directly against most of our conditioning. But in the very first lesson in the way of first book of Way of Mastery, the Way of the Heart, lesson 9 is simply titled All Events Are Neutral. And if you are not aware of how that could be, or if you're, and if you're not aware of how it is you're using the neutral events of life to create joy, to create sadness, to create exhilaration, to create fear, to create anger, if you're not aware of how you're doing it, then you don't have any option for changing it. And that's the benefit of a set of tools like this, because it makes you directly aware, not just that you're doing it, but how you're doing it, and offering you tools for correcting that process whenever it becomes something that's less than enjoyable for you or less than productive in a sense that you might be evaluating it as you need a certain set of results out of life and you're not getting them. Well, if you understand how the process works and you're made aware of tools like the ones at yagain.org, now you're empowered. So while in the beginning, most of us think this can't be true and I would never do this to myself and I don't want to change my pattern of blaming, in the beginning, while all of that is true, not too far down the road, it becomes liberating to realize that you are the architect and you are the general contractor and you're the actual skilled labor and laborer for every emotion you've ever created. Right? In the very first lesson of the Way of Mastery and the Way of the Heart, probably on the fifth page, I believe it is, of that first lesson, the first axiom comes out, and it says, essentially, you never experience anything. Nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. Your choice in this manner is the interpretation. What are you going to make it mean if the three-year-old slaps your knee and says he or she hates you because you won't give them a piece of candy right before dinner or a second piece of candy, etc. Or you won't let them play with the sharp knife, etc. You could make it mean this child is disrespectful and needs a spanking, or you could make it mean this is an intelligent, strong-willed child who will probably grow up to do wonderful things, especially if he or she is nurtured and loved. As you choose the interpretation of your life events and you pour your mind energy into it, I believe if you step back and examine, you will discover that that's the process that creates your emotions and nothing else. It is not possible for me to have an experience that is not created inside my mind-body energy system. The list of examples goes on and on. I tell people on a regular basis, please start observing this for yourself. Notice how many times you've been with a group of people, the 6, 8, 10, 12 of you together, and something happens, and two or three people get vehemently upset, and four or five people don't even notice, and four or five people try to calm them down. But the people who've gotten upset are all upset because of what just happened. At least that's what they think. But it's there to be observed in those moments that that person can't be upset by what happened, because if they were upset by what happened, everyone who saw what happened would have exactly the same flavor of emotion at exactly the same intensity. And often when I say that to people, they'll say something like, well, no, not everybody's going to get angry because not everybody's going to see it the same way. And then I say to them, you just demonstrated what I'm asking you to observe. The way I see it, the interpretation I throw on it, and the thoughts involved in that interpretation, if I put enough of my mind energy into those thoughts, I'm going to generate the emotion that's created by those thoughts. it is not caused by the outside event. And the outside event could be something minor or something major. The outside event could be a car accident that I didn't cause, but it totaled the car that I was hoping to drive for another 5 or 6 years because it's all paid off. The outside event could be a team winning or losing in a game that I was hoping would go the other way. The outside event could be my spouse deciding they don't want to be married after X number of years in the marriage or in the family's dynamic. And all of these things are neutral events until I place an interpretation on them. And if I can understand that, now I can begin to, I said an architect, so now I can begin to draw up other blueprints for how I want my life to go. Now I can be the general contractor who constructs a whole different way of looking at life and focusing my mind energy on things that I have appreciation and gratitude for. And the more I focus my thoughts on things that I have appreciation and gratitude for, the more I generate the emotions of appreciation and gratitude. So please observe this for yourself. Please understand that there is only benefit to be had by learning how your mind-body energy system truly works, and unspeakably powerful positive benefits are available if you have a good set of tools like the ones Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice make available at whyagain.org, and you begin to apply those tools in your life. We've got about 12 minutes left, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation for 10 minutes. What's on your mind? What have I sparked in my monologue so far today? And or what's a great book that you've read recently, or a movie you've seen, or a blog post you've read that you want me to explore? Five, six, three, nine, 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 three, five, eight, one, and press 1. We had one person show up for just a few minutes in the chat room and then drop out. So we have time and we have the airspace. Michael and Jeannie are gone traveling. So again, today the second hour will be the second half of the Getting the Stress You Need workshop from, I don't know whether it's 30 or 40 years ago that Michael did. And the audio of that is going to get replayed today for the second hour. And with luck, Michael and Jeannie will be back again tomorrow. I have several books that I have in rotation and I read on a regular basis, whether I'm listening to them on Audible or I'm reading them. And The Way of Mastery is one of them. The Tao Made Easy is another one, and A Course in Miracles Made Easy is another one. Both of those are by Alan Cohen. Another one is The Mirror Theory, and I've read some of my favorite quotes from The Mirror Theory book on various shows in the past. And the thing about The Mirror Theory is that when it first got introduced to me, if it hadn't come to me from someone that I highly respected, I never would have gotten past the premise. And the premise is that it's a story about a woman, present-day woman, who had crisis in her life and moved to California. And she was really, really treading water, really struggling to be effective. And a gentleman, an odd-looking gentleman in sandals, kind of a hippie-ish type, kind of a cross between a hippie and a car salesman, if I remember correctly, showed up at her door and said, "Hi, my name is Charlie, and I've got some stuff for you to make your life better. And the book is ostensibly Betsy, who's the woman who answered the door, having conversations with Charlie. And Charlie there to enlighten her about the man they used to call Jesus and his family, his mother, his father, his brothers and sisters, his cousins. And each person in the book was, you know, theoretically an actual family member of the man they called Jesus. And each of them had lessons for Jesus. Each of them had lessons to learn on their own. And the lessons were taught through the mirror theory, meaning if I see somebody in a rage, the response that I have to that is going to teach me about myself more than it's going to teach me about them. And so many of the same principles that Michael Rice teaches are contained in that book, The Mirror Theory. And if you can get past the concept that it's a literal story and just review the dynamics and the underlying principles, it is highly instructive. And if it hits you, as it did me, at the right time in your life, it might become one of your favorite books. It's written by Betsy Otter Thompson. And again, these are just principles to observe. And if you're observing them in your life and it works that way for you, great, because then you're more empowered if you can observe accurately in your life how your mind creates your emotions, how that impacts your physical body, how this is literally the mechanism by which you're constructing all of your relationships and interactions, then when it's not going in a way that you find rewarding or fun, now you've got options. Now you've got basically a roadmap or an instruction book or the blueprint for how to do it differently. So another book that I really, really enjoyed and have read numerous times and is in a rotation of sorts in my library is Awareness by Anthony DeMello. And that book has a lot of very straight talk about all the same kinds of things that we're observing here. And one of my favorite stories from that book that relates to what I was just talking about with how I'm creating my experience of life in each moment by how I choose to interpret and respond to life events is that he was giving a seminar to a bunch of nuns and priests. He was a priest himself, I think was a Jesuit. And there was a woman there who was a nun, and she was running a convent, and she was very upset because the Mother Superior hadn't visited her convent in months. And so Anthony DeMello said to the young nun, well, would you like some input? I know the Mother Superior, and would you like me to tell you something that might, you know, help you with this? And she said, oh, yeah, certainly. And he said, well, I know the Mother Superior, and she hasn't been to your convent for, you know, 2 years or whatever it is, because she knows that you're running it so well. And she's got so many people who are not running their convents well, and she is so busy with that that she's just grateful that everything is running so smoothly at your place that she doesn't have to be there. And that's the only reason she hasn't visited. She's just completely absorbed with all these other people that have these problems. And you can see the relief on the nun's face. And then he says to her, so how do you feel hearing that? And she said, oh, my God, I'm just flying. It's wonderful. I feel great. And he says, okay, listen, I've got a chore for you to do, a little errand I'd like to send you on. So he sends her out of the room, and then he says to the rest of the people in the seminar, He says, now, here's the truth. I know the Mother Superior, and she's told me this woman is such a screw-up that this convent is in such a mess that she knows that when she does finally visit, she's going to have to be there a whole year just to straighten it out. And that's the reason she's not contacting or visiting this nun at the convent that she runs. Everybody gasps, and then he says, okay, so when the nun comes back in, she comes back in with a big smile on her face. He says, okay, so how are you feeling? And she says, great. And I said, you know, Anthony de Mello says, well, that's great. And everybody laughs. Why? Because we create experience of life by the interpretation we place on whatever we're perceiving as the outside events. So the essence of this story, in this story, it doesn't matter whether Anthony de Mello actually knows the Mother Superior or not. It doesn't matter whether the Mother Superior actually likes the job that nun is doing in the convent or not. Independent of that, she's creating her misery or creating her joy. And she's creating it based on the interpretation she's choosing and then pouring her mind energy into. And I would offer for your observation that that's what each and every one of us do every single day of our lives. We are choosing interpretations, and then we're pouring our mind energy into those thought patterns, and it is that and nothing else that's generating our emotions and or literally our experience of life. So, please do yourself a huge favor and start that observation process for yourself more aggressively day in and day out. And if you have any negative emotional states that just keep coming back and you're looking for a way to modify them into something more useful or productive, the tools are available at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And we're about to start our second hour, which is the second part of yesterday's Getting the Stress You Need workshop. Again, from Michael, it's 30 or 40 years ago. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Here we go.
In our intermission in the workshop, we had a question that came up from someone in the audience, and I'd like to address that question so that those who are watching the video might have a little more clarity if this question comes up for you, and that is, what's the difference between an intention and a goal? You know, just really refining the difference. And I would offer that the goal is the intention that we have elevated to the point where we decide we want to make it behavior. So I might have a whole myriad of intentions, things I'd like to do, things I want to do. At some point, I'm going to convert one of those to action. I'm going to put my commitment behind it. Use an example. I decide that on my vacation next year, I'm going to travel. And gee, let's see, I'd love to travel to Greece. So I have the intention to go to Greece. I would love to go to Japan, maybe Africa. France has always been of interest to me. So now I have four different intentions, four possible places that I'm going to go. So they'd be in the realm of intention. I haven't decided to take action on any of them yet. But 2 months from now, when I get my final dates back on when my vacation time is going to be, when I'm going to travel, I'm going to have to convert one of those intentions to a goal. I'm going to have to say, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. And that's where the conversion takes place from intention to goal. And once you do that, your mind will produce the best evidence possible to achieve that goal. If you ever ask yourself the question, you know, why did I do that? Or, why do I do that over and over again? And it's against your own will and choice. It's because you hold a goal in your mind. And you've got to look at and change that goal. If you've done the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, you'll remember in step 6 of the worksheet process, the reality management process, you identify the goal that you're holding. And then when you go to number 9, you get rid of the goal. That's the core step in forgiveness. In the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shebag, and it literally translates to cancel. And what it's got to do with is canceling goals. Because your mind always gives you output to back up the goal that you're holding. And if the goal is unconscious, if you don't pay attention to the goal, then you become behavior. You do behavior that you say, I don't know why I did that and I wish I hadn't. You can't have a behavior without a reality. You can't have a reality without a goal. And reality is the output of your mind. It's unique and individual to you at every moment of your life. And your goals determine your reality. Now go back to this man named Jesus 2,000 years ago. And again, let's look at, was he talking about here's how life works or theology? He said, be in this world, but not of it. What was he saying? He was saying, don't allow life to trigger goals in you that drive your behavior. Or life, people out there will be taking over your life. So you're in this world, you're here, you're in full expression and full experience of life, but life doesn't determine what you do. You're the one that's in charge of that sequence we talked about of intention, goal, which filter set, perception, which filter set, and the output of your mind that determines what your behavior is. If you don't determine your goals, someone else will determine them for you. And we are taught in this culture to turn it over to whoever. We are taught as children, turn it over to mom, to dad, to teacher, to religious leader, to government leader, and we go from one to another, and we think that that person sets our goals for us. Well, you know, they set a goal and I had to do it. Well, when we get into the process by which goals are managed, we'll see that no one can set your goals for you but you. Someone else can frame a goal. We're going to go through several steps in how goals are set forward. And someone else can frame a goal for you, but nobody can set it. If you can't distinguish between framing and setting a goal, if you don't know the difference between framing and setting a goal, then you'll think when someone else frames it for you that you have to do it. There's this unconscious setting of it. But you have to set the goal. And of course, the person who doesn't just go along with the crowd is the person who doesn't automatically set their goals according to the latest, you know, authority figure in the crowd. That's the person who becomes, they're called the rebel. What is the rebel doing? The rebel says, excuse me, I'm going to set my own goals, thank you very much. There's a cute poster with a line drawing of several thousand sheep walking or going over a cliff. And in the middle of the crowd is one sheep that's going in the other direction saying, excusez-moi, going the opposite way. And the people who usually take charge of their own minds by managing their goals. The mind cannot be directly managed. It is indirectly managed through our goals. And the person who does that is usually thought of as the person who doesn't follow the crowd. Once you recognize that the setting of the goal is an internal process, it's up to you to determine what your reality will be, what your feelings will be, what your chemistry will be, and what your behavior will be. I was in Atlanta last year doing a workshop, and I had a young lady that came up to me at the intermission in the workshop, and she said, Michael, I want to thank you for saving my life. So really? How is that? She said, well, last year when you were here, I went through the whole series of workshops that you did. And I really did the worksheet process. I really worked with the tools that you presented. I did every workshop. And about 3 months ago, I went home, went into my apartment, locked my door, and there was a man in my apartment with a knife. And he had the knife at my throat and said he was going to kill me. And she said, I had no doubt he was serious, and he was intending to proceed with that act. And she said, I was just terrified, and then all of a sudden she said, I don't know why, but something clicked inside of me, and I could hear you saying, the filter to set is love. And she said, I started to move in that direction, I started to think about that, and as I did, I looked at this man, and I looked in his face, and she said, I could see the terror that he was experiencing. And she said, the minute that I was able to see that terror, She said, all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, but she said, I was just flooded with compassion. What happened? She said, a filter. The chemistry in her body changed. She said, I was just flooded with compassion. All of a sudden, it wasn't about me being killed anymore. I could see the terror in the pain in his eyes. And she said, the instant that happened, he dropped his knife and ran out of my apartment. Totally changed the circumstance. We have a lot more to say about what happens in our lives than we're led to believe. And the filters that are set in our minds and who manages our minds make a major difference in how life unfolds. We oftentimes don't see the behaviors that we do that produce the results that happen in our lives. They're kind of invisible to us. They're transparent to us. And as you take charge of managing your own mind, you'll find there's a major difference in the way that your life goes. So we see that we live in a culture where, the bosses want to set our goals, parents want to set our goals, employees, clients, lots of people want to take charge of and run our minds. You take a look at advertising, and what is advertising geared to do? Advertising is geared to set a goal in your mind. The advertiser wants to run your mind. And if your mind is open and that goal is set in your mind, you may not realize why the next time you walk into the store, you just happen to walk over and pick up this particular brand. But it was a goal that was unconsciously set in your mind that when you walk into the store is triggered by the presence of that product and you buy. Guard the portals of the mind, the Greeks said. They did have that piece of the puzzle very well in place. They had a very good understanding of that. And if you allow others to frame your goals, and you unconsciously, not knowing the difference between framing and setting a goal, you unconsciously set the goal, what will happen is you'll do behavior. Anybody here ever feel powerless? You'll feel powerless. Because it seems like your behavior is at their beck and call. This is the seed and the root of most resentment. When we feel powerless, we resent the person who we say is running our life. But in fact, they're not running our lives at all. All they've done is frame a goal for us. If we've never taken charge of setting our goals ourselves, then it seems they run our behaviors. And we're controlled by someone else. We're controlled because we turn our power over instead of taking charge. And so those feelings of helplessness and powerlessness and resentment come about as a result of our refusal to be responsible for the output of our own minds. And so every behavior that you have ever done comes from holding a goal in your mind. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look into an exercise that does a mass canceling of goals. A thing about this human mind is that it never lets go of anything. It doesn't know how on its own. It can't do it. You've got to train it. There's an interesting little piece of information that comes from India. In India, monkey meat used to be a delicacy. And the way they would trap monkeys is they'd take a coconut and they'd cut a very small hole in the coconut. They'd take out the coconut meat and put food in the coconut that was attractive to the monkeys. They'd attach the coconut to a tree. The monkey would come along, stick its hand in the hole. The hole was just big enough for the monkey to get its hand in. It would grab the food. It's trapped. This monkey body, monkey mind, doesn't know how to let go, even if it's going to cause its death. If you've ever said to yourself, why am I doing this again? What's going on? I thought I said I was never going to do that again. Well, you can say I'm never going to do that again until the cows come home, but if the unconscious goal to do that behavior remains in your mind and is never forgiven, is never canceled, then every time that goal is triggered into activity, you'll do that behavior and you'll go, oh, why am I doing this again? I'm doing it again because I'm not in charge of or in touch with what's going on in my own mind. And this mind does not know how to change itself. There are only two ways to get rid of a goal once it's set. The mind never forgets. One way to get rid of the goal is to achieve it. Once you've satisfied the goal, it's finished. The second way is to cancel it. But if you set a goal and you don't purposely cancel it and never achieve it, that goal will always be there to drive your behavior. Anybody here ever find yourself engaging in what you might consider or observe someone doing childish behavior? You say, oh, why am I so childish at times? Or, you know, something just comes over me. There's this person that I, when I'm around them, all of a sudden I do things I don't normally do. What happened? Or this person in your life who acts, they've got goals from childhood that have never been canceled and never been achieved. And so if they're in an environment like a person who maybe reminds them of Dad, and they've got an uncanceled goal about Dad, that goal is activated, and all of a sudden they're behaving just like they did when they were three with that goal held in their minds. And so it becomes imperative to go back and clean up all of our old goals. Because every goal that you hold is a stressor in your mind. Remember the definition of stress, the difference between the way I want it to be and the way it is, or the way I see it. So as long as I hold goals in my mind that cannot be achieved at the moment and are not canceled, I'm under stress. I've had salesmen, this workshop is kind of an outtake of our Laws of Living course. It's a 14-day intensive that we do at Heartland. In our Laws of Living course, we teach these principles along with a whole other set in the Laws of Living process. This is kind of a subset of the Laws of Living course. And we had a salesman there a couple of years ago who was a high producer kind of salesman, always out there on the road and doing it. And we did the exercise that we're about to do. And after the next day, he came back to me. He's like, I just had the first night's sleep, decent night's sleep that I can remember in my life. Oh, really? How was that? He said, well, I can see how all of these goals were continuously running me. The type A personality has a million goals continuously running and doesn't know how to get rid of them. If you go back and listen to the master, he talked about goal setting. Of course, it doesn't look like it in the translations we usually see, but what we're told is, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. What does that mean? Well, in the Aramaic language, the word evil is an idiomatic word for unfinished or unripened or incomplete. You would take a piece of fruit that isn't ripe and you'd say it's evil. So an evil in that context would be the equivalent of a goal. Sufficient for the day are the unaccomplished goals of that day. What Jesus was telling people how to do 2,000 years ago was how to manage their stresses. And what he was saying is, if you can't do it in the next 24 hours, take it off your list. Because what you've got is a useless stress. And if you add goal to goal to goal to goal to goal to goal that you cannot achieve in the next 24 hours, you use your resources. Why do we have so many people who suffer? One of the most common comments or ailments that you'll find if you talk to the medical doctors that you know is that of chronic fatigue. Why are people chronically fatigued? Because they're carrying a million unachieved goals that they don't even know they're carrying. And now we have the chemistry of stress happening in the structure. It's an error to set a goal for a time period longer than the next 24 hours. And so when you start to manage your mind, you start to manage your stresses. Carrying 1,000 unachieved goals would be like, well, let's imagine that we have a logging truck. And this logging truck is set to deliver tractor trailer loads of logs. So the tractor trailer, or pardon me, the truck itself is sitting in the logging yard, and an order comes in for a load of logs for next week. Well, you hook up the load of logs to the truck, and he could go, but he can't go till next week. And tomorrow morning we get an order for 3 more tractor trailer loads of logs. So we hook 3 more trailer loads of logs onto the truck. And then the next morning, we get an order for another 5 for 2 weeks from now. And we hook 5 more tractor-trailer loads. How many tractor-trailer loads do you suppose you can hook behind that truck before that truck isn't moving? All of its resources are used. Would you run your business like that if you were the trucker? Would you hook your next 10 weeks of orders to the truck and try to haul them around to every stop you've got to make on your way? No, of course not. If you've got one to do for today or two to do, well, you'd hook two up, you'd drop off number one and you'd drop off number two and you'd be finished. And you'd have lots of resources, lots of power available from the truck to haul that load. But if you hook up the next 10 weeks' deliveries, your truck isn't going anywhere. If you hook up goal after goal after goal and don't manage that, then you've just utilized, I see you just striking yourself in the forehead like, oh, I see, I got it, okay. Why are we in overload? Because we're carrying those stressors. The mind is attempting to achieve and direct you to produce that result, and it just consumes the resources. You want to clear out everything that you can't achieve in the next 24 hours, and what you'll find is freshness. What you'll find is a new level of power because you're not loaded down and stressed carrying those goals. So what I'm going to ask you to do now, and if you're at home listening to this video, we'll just ask you to get into a quiet, comfortable position. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Why do we suggest you close your eyes? Well, there's an interesting piece of information that came to me via an ophthalmologist friend of mine. And he's really studied how the brain functions in terms of the visual system. And he tells in his one of his workshops, this fellow's name is Wayne Farr, and he tells in one of his workshops how the number of estimated molecules in the universe is 10 to the 100th power. That's the estimated number of molecules in the known universe. And the possible connections in a single human brain are 10 to the 800th power. And 80% of that is visual. So when you remember Jesus said, go into the closet and close the door? What was he saying? Get quiet, close your eyes. Shut down the visual stimulator and your mind gets to quiet down because those links aren't continuously being stimulated. So I'm going to invite you to get into that quiet place. Allow yourself to just take a couple of deep breaths. And as you take those deep breaths, if there's any stress, any pain anywhere in your body, go to that space of love in your mind. Practice. This is a discipline to practice holding the space of love. Go to that space. Take a deep breath into the tension area and just let it soften and let it go. If there's pain in that tension place, pain has a message for you. Be receptive to its message. Breathe into it, let it soften, and let it go. And I'm going to ask you now to start to review in your mind goals that you've perhaps held over the whole period of your life. And we're going to start out by asking you to go back to your relationship with your mother. One of the first basic relationships. We lived inside of her energy system, experienced the molecules of her body flowing through our system, the emotions, the thoughts, the feelings, very intimately linked. The genetic structure for mom contains a lot of goals that perhaps have managed your life for you. Some of them perhaps constructive and useful, some of them perhaps not so constructive. So I'm going to invite you now to think about your mother in that relationship and see if you hold any unachieved or uncanceled goals in regard to mom. Allow yourself to take a deep breath, and in the ancient Aramaic language, the master teacher taught about an actual elemental force that existed inside of us that would break off the effects of errors if we enlisted its help. To deny it was to leave us in that error. And so throughout this exercise, and throughout your life if you choose to, you might invite that power to go to work in you. Ask it to become active on a new level in you, in assisting and showing you and surfacing any hidden goals in regard to mother. And as those goals surface, I'm going to invite you to just cancel them. And these would be goals from any time in your life. Maybe you were 3 and you wanted to comfort mom because she was crying. I want to fix it for her. You need to cancel the goal to fix it for her. I want to please her, or maybe a goal to displease her. And as you breathe, breathe deeply. Let any goals in regard to mom come to the surface and let them go. Now, in letting them go, and the way you let them go, and it's a practice, it's a discipline. If your monkey body, monkey mind has been used to holding on to your goals, you know, it's kind of like the fingers might be a little bit tight around it. You know, we've all done that parlor game of squeezing a broomstick for 2 minutes as tight as we can, and then, try to open the fingers and they don't open. Well, some of your mental, emotional, and spiritual muscles might be a little locked on some of these goals, and so the practice will be opening the fingers. And as you practice with it, it will become easier and easier to let go of goals, to cancel them. And as you do that, it will strengthen one of the spiritual faculties that we'll talk about a little later in the workshop, and that is the spiritual faculty of will. So as you breathe and let go of any goals in regard to mom, and ask that power, enlist its support in letting go of these goals. And if it's appropriate for you, I'd invite you to set the goal now that that power be available to you to continue this undoing process, to undoing these stressors in your life that we're going to talk about that you'll uncover, or perhaps some that you're not ready to uncover yet, but that you enlist the ongoing support of that power that in Aramaic was called Ruach HaKodesh, an actual elemental force in our minds that will go to work for us and assist us. And now shift to your relationship with your father, another very deep and primary relationship in every one of our lives. Are there any goals in your mind that you hold in regard to father that have never been achieved nor canceled? Ask that power to assist you in surfacing any hidden goals, any unconscious goals. If you notice any tensions in your body, that might be where those goals are stored. Take your breath to those tensions, let them soften, and let them go. Think of now each of your siblings. Are there any goals in your mind that you hold in regard to any of your siblings? I want to be better than them. I want to fix it for them. I want to take care of them. I want them to take care of me. I want them to accept me. I don't want to accept them. Any goals of any kind or quality in regard to siblings, brothers, sisters? Go through them each one by one and ask that power inside of you to uncover and show you any goals that you might hold that have never been achieved nor canceled. And now think about yourself for a moment. Are there any goals in your mind that you hold about yourself or have held at any time in your life that have never been achieved nor canceled? Did you want to be the star, Did you want to be out of the limelight? Did you want to be the best or the worst? Did you want to disrupt or fix? Any goals in regard to self? And this act of canceling goals is a mental act that comes from the spiritual self. The ability to cancel a goal is a faculty of the will. If the will has not yet been strengthened and activated, this might seem a difficult process at first. And the practice, you know, it's kind of like you go into the exercise room, the weightlifting room, and you lift weights and you strengthen your muscles. Well, this strengthens the spiritual muscle of will as you cancel goals. Any goals in regard to self that need to be canceled? Any goals in your mind in regard to achievement? Anything at any time in your life that you wanted to achieve but perhaps didn't, that perhaps still resides in you as a goal? Allow yourself to take a breath and look at those thoughts around achievement. Oh, I want to look good. I want my hair to be perfect. Oh, to be acceptable, my clothes need to be exactly this way or that. If I don't have this or do this or do that, achieve this, I won't be acceptable. If you hold a goal that would come from a thought like that, then what you'll find is that you'll always have to be doing something to be acceptable, and acceptance will never be felt. As you cancel that goal and accept yourself, all of a sudden it's like, oh, acceptance is natural. That's what life is about. Take a deep breath and let any goals in regard to achievement go. Any goals in your mind in regard to school or education from any time in your life? Perhaps a goal to be the A student. Perhaps a goal to achieve some award or reward in school that never quite came off. Perhaps the goal to get a degree that maybe you have never gotten. Cancel that goal. And you might say, well, but gee, you know, I still think I would like to get that degree. Fine. Then as you cancel it, move it over into the area of plans. I plan to get a degree. And at the appropriate time, set the goals that will support you achieving that plan. But don't set the goal to get the degree. Have a plan to get the degree and manage your mind so that the proper stressors occur at the proper time to produce the behavior that will be achieved, finally, as getting a degree. So that would look like, well, let's see, I'm going to put in my daily planner that in June, I'm going to get the application papers to start in September and take those three classes that I need to get. So in your planner, it's now a plan, it's not a goal, on June the 1st, you mark down, and this is what I'm going to do. Now come June the 1st, you get up in the morning. Is the plan to get the degree still there? Yes, it sure is. And is it appropriate for you to go to school in September? Yes, it sure is. Then fine. Now you take this plan, this intention, and you elevate it to a goal. Today, I pick up the phone, I call, and I get the papers I need and fill them out and send them in for applying for school. So you do things in an orderly fashion that create manageable stresses and stresses at appropriate times. Are there any goals in your mind in regard to church? the goal never to go, the goal always to go, the goal to please the religious leader or displease them. Any goals in regard to church? Now, of course, that has to do with the structure of what people set up. Now let's go to the next level. Are there any goals in your mind in regard to God? You know, did you have a goal when you were four in your life? You were told about prayer, and you held a goal for God to fix something in life that perhaps wasn't your place or business to fix? Is that goal perhaps created resentment because it didn't unfold the way that you wanted it to? If you notice with any of these questions that your breath tends to stop, the breath is a switch for mind energy. I'm going to invite you to keep your breath open, keep your breath moving. And as you keep your breath open and moving, you'll be more in touch with those unconscious goals. Any goals in regard to friends? You know, look back in your early childhood. Any friends that you had goals about? Oh, I want to be part of that group of friends. Or I want to keep this person out of my group of friends. I want to please this friend. Or I did something to displease another friend. Oh, I wish I hadn't done that. A goal. Cancel it. And breathe deeply. Go back in your memory bank to your childhood. Are there any goals that you hold in your mind that have never been achieved nor canceled in regard to neighbors? Any goals at all in regard to neighbors? You know, think about the people on each side of you where you lived, the people across the street. Were there ever any goals that you held that have never been achieved nor canceled in regard to them? Breathe deeply, soften, and let them go. Any goals in regard to jobs? Jobs that you've either had or not had. Any goals that you hold in regard to careers that need to be canceled? I need to make this much money. I want to go to this place on the corporate ladder. You look at the number of people who hold that as a primary goal, and they love their families, but they've never set goals regarding their families. So the goals that drive their behavior keep them at work 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when the family confronts them, they say, but I love you and I want to support you and nurture you and care for you. And they're wonderful intentions. But if those things are never elevated to goals, they never enter into behavior. And the active goals, I've got to achieve the corporate ladder, run this person's life. Mind management is a key. Any goals in regard to relationships in your life? People that you've had relationships with that have been intimate relationships, close friendships, spouses, lovers. Any goals that you hold in any of those relationships? Oftentimes the childhood goal of wanting to be close to someone, if it's never achieved and they're canceled, can be running someone's life 20, 30 years later. I've seen more than one person who was promiscuous, and once they uncovered, when they finally looked at it and uncovered it, what they found was that it was a childhood goal to be close and intimate with someone that was still running their lives and driving this behavior that they couldn't seem to control that led to promiscuity. Once they cleared that goal, that was the end of it. Any goals in regard to your body, the way it looks, the way it feels, its size, its shape, its weight? Any goals that have never been achieved nor canceled? It would be an error to set the goal to lose 20 pounds. Why? Because you also hold a goal in your mind. You've been trained throughout your whole life that if you lose something, you're going to go find it and maybe get some extra. And so to set that goal can be the thing that, well, we force ourselves to take off the weight, but then go and put additional on because that goal to find what we've lost. Oh, what do I want to do? Well, I have a plan to achieve my ideal weight. All right, that's a great plan. It's not a goal. Don't make it a goal or you'll be overloaded. And now what you do is you set out on a daily basis. Remember, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. Sufficient for the next 24 hours is the setting of the goals that will help you to achieve your plan. So you set your goals accordingly. Ah, today I'm going to go out and run. Today I'm going to eat this way. Today I'm going to think that way. Today I'm going to forgive the things that bring about the need to protect myself, which oftentimes is one of the goals that underlies weight. So you set your goals in an appropriate time frame where they're achievable, and you cancel the rest. Any goals in your life about managing your behavior? Any goals in your life about your emotions? Oh, I don't ever want to react like that again. Well, to say to yourself, I don't ever want to react like that again, is to set a goal to react like that again. Cancel that goal. What do you want to do? Oh, I'll set the goal for the next 24 hours that if that emotion comes up, what I'll do is I'll breathe through it, I'll forgive, and choose to stay in the love filters, to stay in Rachma and Kubha. There's a great saying in the 12-step programs, one day at a time. They knew exactly what it took. Don't set it for more than 24 hours or you'll be overloaded with stress. Any goals in regard to travel that have never been achieved nor canceled? Gee, when I was a kid, I had this goal to go travel Europe. Is that still a nagging burden in the back of the mind? Cancel the goal. Let go of it. Get rid of the stress. And in an appropriate time frame, go travel Europe. Set the goal as appropriate. Do the steps that are necessary, and you'll achieve the result. Now let's just do a couple of pieces of work around looking at emotional states. If you've ever, say for instance, found yourself in a fit of anger and said to yourself afterward, I don't know why I did that, or I don't want to do that again, you need to be aware that a fit of anger is the result of a goal. And so I'm going to invite you for a moment to just pick a specific situation in your life where perhaps you've been angry and would rather not have been. And now ask yourself to be shown, ask that you be shown what the goal was that produced that behavior of anger. What was the goal that you held in your mind that your mind produced a behavior-driving reality called anger? Breathe deeply. Soften into it. And cancel that goal. Think of a time when perhaps you've been in fear and wish you hadn't. The mind produces fear because there's a goal. And if fear takes over and the mind of love disappears, and you just enter into a mind that's going to tend to make mistakes. Well, but gee, it was reasonable for me to want to survive. Okay, I agree, it's reasonable to want to survive. But if you hold the goal so powerfully about survival that it triggers fear in you, you just lost the mind of love. And you're going to frustrate your attempts to survive. So you'd cancel the goal to survive. Well, gee, Michael, that seems backward. Yes, it may seem backward, but if it's a stressor that takes you into the mind of fear, remember the first law was keep Rachma and Kubba, keep the loves set in your mind. Perfect love is what will cast out the fear, what will eradicate the energies and the realities of fear, and therefore the results in your life that are produced by fear. Breathe deeply. And let that goal go. And I'll invite you to continue this process of looking for, searching for, and canceling goals that you've held from any time in your life as we close this meditative exercise and move on to the state of, or to looking at another tool for managing the mind. So I'm going to invite you to just kind of come back up to a wide awake state, fully conscious, fully alert, fully aware. You're with us. Take a deep breath. And we're going to kind of shift gears now from that quieter space and look at another tool. And the tool is called Mind Goal Management. We've handed a worksheet to those that are in our audience here, and there'll be one coming up on your screen. And we'll invite you to look at that. I'm going to just read the top part of it so that those who are watching on the screen, if it's not too easily readable, will have it available. Managing goals involves much more than keeping and completing a to-do list. A to-do list isn't a goals management process. If you're doing to-do lists and think you're managing goals, you're probably overloaded with stress. There are actually five things that you can do with the goal management faculty that you have. And that faculty is the faculty of will. So it's more than keeping and completing a to-do list. We have literally thousands of goals in our minds that we've been trained to unconsciously set goals all the time. The purpose of this worksheet is to bring the process of managing our minds through the management of goals to a conscious level. It is a format for framing, setting, and canceling goals, three of the five capabilities of the human will. The other two capabilities of will, which are strengthened by practice throughout the day, are the ability to select a goal for immediate attention and maintain a goal. Each of these five capacities is as important as the others in fully exercising and developing your will. In our goal-oriented society, which does not put much emphasis on canceling goals, the canceling of goals each evening is imperative and leaves the mind free of stresses of the world while sleeping. Giving yourself at least 5 minutes to silently focus on love and breathing after goal canceling and in the morning before setting your goals are ideal ways to begin and end your day. So we're going to suggest some goals that you might set on a daily basis. And this worksheet becomes a format for developing the faculties of will. So the spiritual faculties, the one we're going to talk about here is will, are strengthened by doing these five items. That is, that we can frame a goal. And we spoke earlier about that. Oftentimes, the advertisers want to frame your goal. Most everybody in your life wants to run your life. They want to frame your goals. But that's all somebody external to you can do, is frame them. And you can practice framing goals for yourself. You can select a goal for immediate attention. You can maintain a goal. In other words, it's the faculty of will that decides which goal you're going to achieve right now, which goal you're going to go for. And you can maintain that goal throughout the day so that it creates motivation and drives your behavior, actually sets realities up that inspire you to move in a certain direction. So that's the ability to maintain a goal. You can set a goal. In other words, and we'll look at that setting process in a few minutes, once you've framed a goal, the framing of the goal is not the setting of the goal. The framing of the goal does not bring it into action in your mind. It's the setting of the goal, the choice to say, yes, this is what I'm going to do, is what brings the goal into the behavior cycle in the mind. And then the last, but certainly not the least, probably the one that's most missing in our culture, is to cancel a goal. Probably the most important one for most people to practice is the ability to remove from the mind a goal at will. And most people can't do it at will because they've never met will. They haven't practiced strengthening this spiritual faculty. So as you utilize this sheet, it provides a format. And you'll notice that you've got a copy on the front and on the back, so you could fill one out. You could do a goal sheet right now if you would like. And then you've got one to make copies of for future use. And so the starting point, we'll look at an evening process. The starting point on this worksheet process happens in any given evening where you start to use the sheet. And you look at all of the conscious and unconscious unachieved goals from the day. So that's the first thing I do. I've canceled all of those goals. So I want to run through. What were the goals that I held in my mind from yesterday? I'm going to cancel. I'm going to let loose of those goals. So that's the first step. So I'm creating a clear slate. It's kind of like that example I used of the truck and the logs attached to it. What am I doing? I'm unhooking every trailer from the truck, so that the power is free, it's open, it's there. Second step, we're going to suggest that you integrate this as a part of your daily routine and daily practices. I give myself time for inspirational reading, that you take some space to really key into the high thinkers, the high spiritual beings that have brought teachings to us. And if you take time each day to do that, what you'll do is you will teach your mind how to set into action realities that are consistent with higher and higher ways of behaving. And of course, the check boxes are there, if that makes sense to you, to check it off. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. And then I give myself 5 minutes to focus on love and connected breathing. How does that look? Well, earlier we did that love exchange. We're suggesting you do it twice a day. So here you are. It's the evening time. You're ready for sleep. You're going to get quiet. You're going to close your eyes and go inside, if this is a goal you choose to set. And you're going to go to that love exchange, and you're going to really strengthen the condition of love in you. And you just focus on that and stay in a quiet space with the closet closed. You don't go into the closet and close the door, Jesus said. Close your eyes, get quiet, go inside, and just let yourself focus on love. And then connected breathing is a very powerful tool. We do a workshop called Still Point Breathing in our intensives. And if you look at someone who's in a state of pain and turmoil, they shut down, they suppress themselves by holding the breath. And so connected breathing is a way to open things up. And so 5 minutes of connected breathing, and a connected breath is a breath where the in-breath and the out-breath flow as a unit, and it sounds like this. A deep breath that goes deep into your system. So 5 minutes of that. And then the detailed framing of a goal for tomorrow. And you'll see there are room for 4 goals in each section. So what is it that I want to do? I now see. And what you want to do when you're setting the what, that is the first segment there, is you want to look at what's the end result you want to produce. The result you want to produce. What do you want it to look like? Okay? So let's imagine that I've got a desire to have a wonderful meal. So what would the end result be? Well, what I'm going to visualize, the what that I'm going to do, and this is a way to inspire the mind in the direction of producing the result, rather than focusing on the work, is I'm going to see myself sitting at the table enjoying this delectable meal. That's the what. Okay? And then the why. What I love about having achieved this result. And you'll notice you're going to speak it as though it's achieved. You want to see the end from the beginning, right at the start. So what I love about having achieved this result is that I've had this wonderful culinary experience that nurtures me. That's what I love about it. And I'm in appreciation for the wonderful food that I'm given that nurtures my body and feeds every cell. How? I'm going to accomplish my chosen result by taking this action. Well, what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to go to the refrigerator. I'm going to get out the items that I need. I'm going to chop and prep. I'm going to cook. And so I'll go through now. Here's your to-do list. But you'll notice the to-do list is just one little segment of the whole process. Most people think their goals are the to-do list. That's not it. It's a much more conscious process when you're fully engaged in it. So how am I going to accomplish it? When? I want to set a time frame so my mind can produce the behavior-driving realities needed to achieve it in an appropriate time frame. And what you'll find is as you get really keyed into setting your goals, really putting them in place and framing them appropriately and clearly, is that there'll be a level of support that comes to you to produce those results that just seems miraculous. You'll have resources that show up to assist you in producing those results. And the clearer you are with each step, the stronger the vibration, the energy will be that you set up to attract support for producing those results in your life. So when am I going to do it? And now, okay, so this is in the evening just before you go to bed. Now you're going to ask assistance of that inner power. So Rukha's named here. Rukha means the eternal forces from God. And so there's a specific one for human beings. And I'm going to ask for support. So I asked Rukha to assist me during sleep and having clarity and giving me feedback on achieving the goals I've framed. Now you'll notice to this point, you've only framed your goals. You haven't set anything. So you're going to go to bed with no stresses. You cleared the goals from yesterday. You're going to go to bed, have a total clear night's sleep, and you'll have all of the resources available to clarify you and give you feedback on this goal. Then, each morning, as you get up in the morning, you're going to work towards setting, checking, and committing to your goals. So, once again, I give myself time for inspirational reading. Yep, I want to do that. I give myself 5 minutes to focus on love and connected breathing. Yes, I'm going to do that. Each intention carried out by each goal is connected to love. Now here you've got a space for all 4 goals. So you want to check out and make sure you're keyed into love with this goal. And that way your mind's going to be at its highest and best. This goal is both in accord with my primary and secondary purpose. And our primary and secondary purpose is another workshop that we do called Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment. But just be aware, if you haven't done that workshop, that you want to make sure that your goals are on purpose. When they're on purpose, you align your power. When you align your power, and this comes from our workshop called Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment, you align all levels of your energy and you become like a laser. Your power becomes fully available. I like this goal. I want to be real clear that having slept on it all night, I like it. You know, you've heard the saying, you know, let them sleep on it. It gives time to think about it. I now commit with emotion to setting this goal. So I'm really going to key in, yep, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to put some emotion behind it. I visualize with emotion the achievement of this goal. I see myself actually producing the result. I have framed and now set the goal. So here's where you elevate it. I have framed and now set the goal to manage my goals for tomorrow. Okay, so you're now setting a goal to do tomorrow's work, so that tonight you're going to be motivated to do this sheet again. And have I been successful at doing that? Unsuccessful? Or did I cancel the goal? I ask Rooka to incline me to be and do whatever it takes to assist me in having clarity about achieving my goals. And then you've got a results space there. Results and feedback. Was I successful on goal 1, 2, 3, and 4? Did I cancel it? Did I return it to plans? And note, make a note as to how it feels to be successful. Become conscious of the level of feeling if you are unsuccessful at doing it. And be aware of the tensions that are created in setting the goals. And you'll take over your life. Thank you.